You're listening to the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast, a show about trending and difficult topics on serverless and in the cloud. Today, we're talking about developer advocacy. What on earth is it? I brought Michael Liendo, or as many of you know him, Focus Otter, on the show to talk about why DAs are important, what exactly they do, and how you too can get started with content creation. Ready, set, let's go. Have you ever gone from hello world all the way to production? It's harder than you might think. After you get over the excitement of how fast your template or quick start got you into the cloud, you start realizing that production-ready software has a lot of nuance. There's business-specific logic, proper error handling, observability dashboards and alarms, list goes on. Most of your time isn't necessarily spent coding, but rather on discovery. Spent learning how to solve these problems and coming up with long-term strategies. But I have good news. There are people whose job it is to help you get there. Experts in the field who have solved these problems before and have a vested interest in teaching you what they've learned. With me today is one of those people, Michael Liendo. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, Alan. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here and chat with you on all the topics that we have going on today. It's going to be a great episode.
Absolutely. I'm glad that I finally got you nailed down and we're here together doing something at last. So you're a senior developer advocate for AppSync at AWS.
Yes,
and
sir.
You also have one of the most recognized personal brands in tech. So tell me, how did you get here?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Quite a story. Right after college, a lot of folks, if you have heard my story before, you know this part. But for folks in the crowd that are new, I go by Focus Otter everywhere, but that takes a backstage to how I got into tech. I recently dropped out of college. I went to school to be a teacher. Funny, because I'm a DA now. But after that first year of college, I was really struggling with what I wanted to do. And it turns out, who would have thought, modeling was what was my catalyst. So I was a professional model for the next 6 years and doing a bunch of fashion, runway, and a bunch of other cool things. That led me to get a thicker skin and to be comfortable in the community. And I always did have this sense that I wanted to be a teacher of sorts. So my agent told me, she said, hey, what if something happens to the moneymaker? What are you going to do? And turns out there was this really cool and innovative game called Angry Birds. And I said, how hard could it be? I want to be an app developer. And sure enough, I went ahead, I picked up a book on Objective-C and I failed. And it was great because I was saying, well, maybe Objective-C isn't for me. I'm going to be a Java developer. And I failed. And then I took to JavaScript. You know, maybe I just typed in what is the best programming language wrong. I clearly meant JavaScript when I put Java. And what I learned along the way was I never did start from zero. Every time I failed at Objective-C, I learned a couple concepts, which led me to Java. I failed again, but I was really just learning along the way. And I had a set of projects in my tool set so that way I can use those as a launching pad. And by the time I got to JavaScript, I could have gone in any order. I truly believe that. But by the time I got to JavaScript, jQuery UI was big. And the advent of the web, I was looking into Grunt and Gulp and all these cool things. Rollup was just taking off. I was a developer at that point. And I can say the rest is history until I jumped into the cloud.
That's insane. And it shows a lot of grit in your personality that you started with Objective-C and you didn't quit.
Oh my goodness. It was so bad. I mean, it's great now. And well, I guess, do I have to say it's great now? We have Swift now. But those are crazy times. I like to think there wasn't as strong as a community back then. Twitter wasn't used like how it is today. And I don't even think it existed right away. And then from there, we also didn't have conferences taken off. Developer advocacy wasn't a thing. Meetups really weren't a thing. It was tough times. So I appreciate it. It did take a lot of grit. But eventually, I found a community. They helped me get onto the pedestal of learning more and more into tech. They kept me interested. And from there, I slowly gravitated towards speaking at my first conference. And I want to say that wasn't all that long ago. I'm talking 5 years ago. And I just kept the ball rolling. What's crazy is we've known each other for a little bit now. I don't think I've ever told you that story.
No, you're kind of catching me off guard. I wish I had known so I could have prepared. I want to talk about some of the strategies that you were learning originally and how you adapted the learning strategies when you were self-teaching and how you've taken those to what you do now and teach hundreds, if not thousands of other people as a developer advocate.
Yeah. The reason why I like to tell that origin story is because people think, well, you're self-taught, you're a failed teacher, and on top of that, you really didn't have a technical background. After modeling, I got into a bad bicycle accident, so I have a slight scar on my face now, and that ended my modeling career. So I was bartending for a while. And you factor all those in, model, bartender, etc. It's like, how did you become a developer advocate? Well, you heard how I got into tech initially, and I was an engineer for a while, but I realized that I really didn't mind being in front of a camera, being in front of a community, of an audience. And I like to think that a lot of that was because of bartending and being a waiter and being in front of people who literally just judge you by how you look. To me, I took that and I angled it towards tech. I said, I'm going to be the person who leads the lunch and learns. I'm going to be the person who makes the YouTube videos. Everybody's going to see me anyways. Why not combine the two and have tech plus an in-person educational experience? So I like to think that I was doing developer advocacy before it had an official name.
And we should probably take a sidestep before we go any deeper into that and just describe what developer advocacy is. I hear a lot of terms that are tangential to this, and mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people know what they are if they haven't been at companies that have public-facing positions. Like, what's the difference between a developer advocate, a tech evangelist, and a solutions architect?
Yeah, great questions. I like to think that an evangelist is someone who is closer to the marketing side of a product, and they are more in tune to make sure that that product always has the best looking image of itself. Now, a solutions architect is in that same vein. It's just they're not on the marketing side. They're on the technical side. So they're going to provide the best technical solutions given a certain scenario. Maybe you're trying to build out a full stack application and you need to know how a certain product fits into that architecture. A solution architect is going to be a great fit there. Now, developer advocacy is a little bit different though. It's community focused, sure, but it's going to sit in between the community and the product team. And that's a very subtle but important distinction than something like an evangelist who is closer to marketing. My job as a developer advocate is to be sort of customer number zero. I need to go ahead and take our product, kick the tires on it, and let the team know this is what's good, but also this is what we should be improving. This is what the documentation and the developer experience looks like. Now, we could not have a developer advocacy team, just like how you mentioned, a lot of organizations don't. But that means that your customer zero is actually your customers that are probably paying and investing their time into your product. So you don't want them to be the ones to find all of the weak points. That's what we're for. So we can build out content to make the product look good, but we're also going to take in that community feedback and bring that over back into the engineering team so we can help improve it.
You and I have spoken about this at length. You know, we're both in similar positions where we work. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned mid-funnel developer advocacy. And before we dive into that, another level set that I want to do beforehand is, what is the funnel? It's typically something that you hear about in marketing and sales, but I haven't heard it a lot in developer advocacy. So let's talk about funnel. What's the difference between top of funnel, mid funnel, and what happens at bottom of funnel?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, the term is actually borrowed from marketing, where you're literally imagining a funnel similar to an email campaign, where the top of the funnel is all of your customers coming into your product for the very first time. Now, mid-funnel is going to be those customers that already have experience with your product, but they're going to be building it out more for production-ready use cases. And then the bottom of the funnel are going to be your most invested customers, typically the big fish in the pond. They're spending a lot of money on it, and they have very unique and niche use cases. So you want to keep them satisfied because they're bringing in value, but their problem typically isn't going to be what everybody else is experiencing.
So that mid-funnel is kind of like what I was describing at the very beginning of this episode, is the people that have gotten past Hello World, have deployed their quick start out into the cloud, and now they're starting to make changes, and they're realizing, oh, there is actually a lot more to just hitting deploy and my application working.
I love the mid-funnel. It's my favorite. That is my bread and butter. That's where I like to be. A lot of developer advocates are top of funnel, meaning they're trying to get customers to use their product. And that's great. But again, we're thinking about a funnel here. That's a wide piece. That's a wide net that's being cast. I myself prefer to focus on the customers who are having those pain points because that documentation, that example, was never meant to cover their use case. They're looking for something a little bit more production ready. And that's where I come in.
Got it. So like in a restaurant scenario, the top of funnel people are those guys hanging out outside of the restaurant that says, hey, you should come in. The food's really good here. And the mid funnel people are your servers that are giving you the meal of the day and saying, this stuff is actually what's good on the menu.
You're right. That's actually a really good analogy because you're right. Those servers have the inside scoop. They can talk to the chef and say, they didn't like this. You know, hey, you're cooking the steak wrong. But they can also make suggestions and say, yeah, I know you said that you wanted the wedge salad, but let me tell you about this special spring salad that we just got in. You might like that a little bit better. They can cater it to your experience. Now, I want to be clear here that developer advocacy typically works in a one-to-many fashion. When we talk about solutions architect earlier, that is a one-to-one fashion. We're building a solution for a certain type of problem, a certain type of customer. Developer advocacy, because our time is pretty valuable, we're working with a lot of different people and wearing a lot of different hats. We do want to find the best way to serve the most people based off of which piece of the funnel we're trying to target.
So does that mean that people that are doing greenfield development are in this kind of mid-funnel area? Maybe they're building something brand new for the first time. They're on a cloud migration and they're figuring out what services they need to use. Are they not working directly with developer advocates? Are they just consuming the content that's created? How does that fit in?
Well, that's where I get myself into trouble, Alan, because I say you can DM me and I will help you out on an individual basis. But truth be told, the proper way of doing things is to make sure that they reach out to a team, a group of solution architects, and possibly a developer advocate to sort of get that inside scoop that we were talking about to better form their product idea. Now, that's in addition to all the other things that you have to do when launching greenfield stuff. I myself am a fan of hammock-driven development, so I'll sit on an idea and just think about it for, you know, a day or two before actually jumping into the architecture. But there are a lot of different ways that you can approach this.
Now, how is that hammock-driven? Explain that to me.
So there's a YouTube video. Maybe we can link that into the show notes. Super, super popular, where before you start on any complex task, just think about it and try to understand what it is that you're actually getting yourself into. When I'm thinking about launching something greater than a to-do application, I'll just sit and I'll just think and, you know, it'll be passive. I'll do the dishes or do some yard work. And I'll just think about this application and, you know, what are some of the nuances that I might come across? What don't I want to be the bottleneck? And if anything, I'll test out those scenarios and those individual projects that I'm creating to help build out my bigger picture. They become content. They become something that my audience could digest because now I'm solving real world problems and I'm putting it out there for others to learn. That's, again, approaching that mid-funnel developer advocacy role.
You know, asking developers not to just jump into building is one of the hardest and silliest things that you can ask of developers. I've never met a group of people that want to action more than developers.
And not just action more with code. It has to be code. Everything that we do has to be written. Even if there's a ready-made solution, I have to write it myself. Yeah, it's a tough world to be in.
100%. I'm the same way. And I kind of approach content, at least from what I create, almost in the exact opposite. I'm more of a into the fire guy than I am a hammock guy, where I will go in with blinders on. I have an idea and I start building and realize typically very quickly that I approach this with assumptions that are very, very wrong. And what I use for my strategy is almost the exact opposite. I'm going to go in with the assumptions that I assume other people have too, learn, and then create the content that says, wait, hold on, before you do this, it doesn't work like the way that you think that it works.
I think we're both hitting on a key point here is that regardless of how you start, either way, we're building off of the backs of people who have already taken this path before. We're taking those assumptions, saying, what can I learn? What can I do that other people have mimicked and try to apply that to my application? And sometimes it doesn't work and that's okay. But you need people that have been in the fire. And to borrow the saying from Yen Soi, the burning monk, you need the people that have been in the trenches to really try to get what you're trying to accomplish. Because you can't say, like, I'm going to just boot up a Create React app and have one Lambda function and just fill that with everything. And it's typically you're not going to want to scale that way. You're going to want to do things right if you're trying to take it to production. If you're just kicking the tires, nothing wrong with that. And again, that's the difference between top of funnel and mid funnel developer advocacy and content creation here. You want to make sure that you're putting something out production ready so that way you can set yourself best up for success, but then also others can learn from you in the future.
So one of the things that I really like doing on this show is playing devil's advocate and just asking the hard questions.
We're just talking about all kinds of advocacy today. Developer advocacy, devil's advocate.
Exactly. I'll switch from advocating for developers to advocating for the devil for a second. What would you say to people who argue with you that the best way to learn is by doing? Like, I had Ro, who's another AWS serverless hero, who has an entire business on creating e-courses and learning by doing and really getting your hands dirty to understand this is how things are properly made. There's a lot of people that take that to extremes and say, I'm going to do the discovery myself and I'm going to go and build. I'm not going to reach out and talk to somebody, A, because I don't like talking to people, but B, because I don't know you exist at all. And I'm just going to go on this adventure by myself. What would you say to people like that? Is there still a place for a DA role in that paradigm?
Absolutely. Because at some point, if you can build it all on your own, that's great. But what they should realize is that content creation isn't a purely outward-facing thing that you do. And it's not purely consuming either. You need to find that balance. So for the people that can just build a project, not have to look at some example that I or others have created, that's great. But then you're doing a disservice to the community by not taking that knowledge and then putting it out there yourself. You were able to create something valuable, and just me being me, and again, focus on the community, it's almost like a how dare you not share that with others so that way they can help learn and grow the same way that you did.
Not everybody likes sharing. When I first started getting into this whole journey, I was an architect at my last job in a big enterprise and got super excited about sharing because I would do all the research. I would then teach the developers that were on my teams all the things that I was learning and just got super into it. Everybody responded really well internally, so let's go externally and do that. And I would tell the developers that I was working with, you should try. You should try learning and then teaching people. A lot of people just don't like that. That's just not their personalities to do so.
And that's perfectly fine. You don't have to be the teacher. You can also be the student. But I would say, as someone, again, who's very community focused, and now that everyone sort of understands my beginnings, you can understand why I come off this way. But I wouldn't be here if it weren't for others that sort of blazed the path for me. And now I'm in a position, fortunately, where I can start to blaze my own path. But I also want to make sure that I'm building that same thing for everybody else. I have plenty of friends who don't like to create content. I'm always like, you're so smart. You should put this information out there. Alan, yourself, like, how many times have we pinged ideas off of each other? And we said, you know what? Instead of just keeping that to ourselves, a lot of folks may not know this, but a lot of our blog posts are influenced in one way or another from our own learnings and what we share. It doesn't have to be the senpai teaching the Padawan. I just butchered so many meme references there. And it doesn't have to be like the guru teaching the beginner, right? It can be two smart people bouncing ideas off of each other and then just sharing those to their respective audiences.
Absolutely. I'm not going to make the bold claim that you and I are the smartest people out there, but...
Oh, I am.
Okay. So, but you and I have gone back and forth on the emoji thrower several times. And I think as a result of that, we've really sent it through several iterations that have landed it in a really cool spot that drives a tons of interaction for people that do what we do.
Absolutely. And that goes back to, I wanted to build out something that nobody had done before. I couldn't find a solution and I got stuck. I went building it first. And then once I got done building it, I put out a blog post. You and a couple others picked it up, made iterations on it. More blog posts came out. And for those that aren't aware of the emoji thrower, essentially, when you join one of our presentations, you also get a QR code to scan. And on that QR code, you get some information, but the main thing is some emojis. And every time you press an emoji, it shows up live on our presentation. Now, Alan, you work at Momento. I work for AppSync. And we're both using some form of real-time communication to send those through. And it's just really cool to see different implementations of it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I like about developer advocacy is the idea generation and fostering component of it. You don't have to use exactly what I'm creating, but hopefully what I've done is given you a launch pad. Hopefully I've given you enough information for you to tie a practical example and a practical implementation as well to your use case to take that back home and implement it yourself.
Absolutely. I never would have thought about caching. This is just a quick shout out to Momento. I never would have thought about caching had you not built the emoji throw. I didn't realize that you could do things like that where you have topics and these just super fast cache systems. I simply think a lot of things fit into the app sync category where you have real-time HTTP requests and WebSockets. Taking developer advocacy and content creation, putting those together, where now we have a friendship going on. We have ways to read each other's blog posts. I can use your tools, apply them to my way of doing things, and we're both leveling up ourselves.
For sure. Now let's talk about how other people can do that. How can other people that aren't developer advocates, that are developers, learning, looking for things, how can they A, find us, and B, do something with what we're creating?
If you are an engineer and you're trying to level up, you typically know where to Google. You have your hubs, whether that's Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, you know, Medium, whatever blog post series you're trying to get your learnings into. The core thing that we're talking about right now is we're building real world applications. And when we get stuck, what do we do? A lot of times you can go to your product's documentation and hopefully if it's good, you can learn about some API that'll help you out in your use case. However, that documentation knows nothing about the product that you're trying to build. So being engaged in the community is going to be a huge step. And that could be as simple as reaching out on Twitter or X, whatever we're calling it these days. And as far as attending a conference and engaging with people face-to-face, there's really no wrong way of approaching it. My big stressor is to make sure that you're engaging. And when you do figure out that solution, maybe consider putting it out there so that somebody else could take advantage of it, or pinging the person that helped find that solution for you and just giving them a quick shout out, because we do appreciate that as well.
So that's not easy, what you just said. Reaching out is not easy. And in the same vein, creating that first something. Whenever you make the decision to create that first blog post or create a podcast or whatever it is, it's really scary. I know whenever I venture into a new medium, I get imposter syndrome like crazy.
Yeah.
I definitely overwork the first thing that I do. I'm wondering if people are going to love it or hate it. And I go back and forth on whether or not I should publish it at all. Even with the history that I have with content creation, it's still scary. Do you have any advice for people that are nervous about reaching out for the first time or creating that first piece of content?
Yeah. Especially in the content creation field, don't consider it as you're creating content for everybody else. You're creating a public facing wiki for yourself. You're creating something so that when you approach this problem again in the future, you have a place where you can find that solution. Now, if it benefits somebody else, great. Typically, when you're approaching a brand new platform for the first time, you're not going to have an audience there. You're not going to have a huge SEO presence for people to find you. So you really are just sort of pumping things out into the void. So that helps me get over imposter syndrome. When I started on TikTok, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Fortunately, though, my videos got zero views, and it was just something where I could continue to learn and build on. Now I still get zero views, but I'm more comfortable doing it.
That's really funny. I didn't actually know that you were on TikTok. You're still putting stuff out there?
No. I actually migrated to YouTube Shorts, but short form video in general is something where I haven't found the right way to syndicate my longer form content into. Typically, my stuff is 15 minutes. It's a 10-minute blog read. And taking the right piece of that and turning it into a 60-second video on YouTube is really difficult, but I do like it because it forces me to think in a different way. How could I maximize somebody's engagement because I only have them for this limited amount of time?
If you found the right way, if there is a right way, do you think engineers can get meaningful insights and lessons from a 1-minute video?
I do, but not in the way that they're probably used to. They're not going to get the big, aha, this is a solution that I was needing. And I think that's why I failed in the beginning. I was trying to give them some sort of technical solution in 1 minute, and it just didn't work. Typically, what they're going to find the most benefit from is something that just pings their interest. And that's really what YouTube Shorts and short form content is all about. I'm just going to get you interested so that way, one, you know that I exist. Two, you know that if you want to find out more, there's oftentimes a link to some longer form content. But at the very least, I just want you to take this 1 minute time that we spend together, stick that in the back of your mind. And when somebody says, hey, have you ever thought about doing this? Like, oh, wait, yeah, there was a Focus Auto video about that. Let me pull that up real quick. That's where I think the value is going to come for engineers.
So to track back to our funnel talk a little bit earlier, that the short-term video, what you're describing is the right approach to it. It's more top of funnel. It's casting that super wide net,
yeah,
establishing credibility and getting people to say, let me dive in from here.
Exactly. I like that a lot, where you can be a mid-funnel engineer, take a snippet of what you talked about and have that be your top of funnel content. Now, I like to say that I'm a mid-funnel developer advocate because I do have that engineering background. I mean, I was a UI as well as a front-end engineer for many years. I just really didn't like doing Hello World projects. I like to build out SaaS applications, micro SaaS applications in particular, and show folks, even though I work on the API layer at AWS, an API is not sexy. I can't sell somebody an API, right? Everyone wants to know, how do you build something valuable with this? So that's where I put my focus, and folks seem to be resonating with it really well.
Day two things.
Day two things. We always talk about day one at AWS. Sometimes you got to think, you know, what does day two look like?
That's one of the very interesting things that I think about, because a lot of content, you know, I publish a newsletter every week about the cool content that comes out the prior week. And there are so many things week over week about day one. Day one meaning, here's your intro. Here's Hello World. Here's this cool thing that I found that you can do. And here's a quick start for you to do it. And then day two is everything after that. Basically, the last 30 minutes that you and I have been talking, it's the rest of the life of your application, be it, you know, developing and then maintaining and enhancing in the future. That's the majority of the life of software, much, much more so than hello.
There's a saying, like an old saying, on the journey to 1,000 miles, it's not the boulder that makes you quit. It's the pebble in your shoe. And I always like to think about that, because it's not going to be this big, obvious thing in my application that I'm building. It's not going to be, I forgot to add in authentication. You can throw in authentication on anything. But it's going to be some nuance that you didn't quite catch or plan for, or maybe even wasn't of value at the time when you first started. But now it's something you have to consider. And that's day two. Okay, now we're into it. Now my users are using my app, and I need to provide some sort of new value that I never accounted for. Does your product still work with me at that point? And that's the things that I like to focus on.
That's great. And with that, I'm going to cut us off. That was a fantastic summary of what people can get out of developer advocacy. I love it. Love it so much. So for people that want to get a hold of you, should they just Google Focus Otter?
That would work. Google Focus Otter and not Michael Liendl. You might get my modeling pics if you do the latter.
I'm sure some people want to search for that though, right? I mean, that's piqued my interest. I'm definitely going to do that.
Let's cut the show now. Focus Otter everywhere. You can catch me on Twitter, YouTube, and Hashno. Those are my big platforms. But yeah, feel free. My DMs are always open to you folks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. This was an awesome conversation. Learned a lot. We should do it again sometime.
Always a pleasure, Alan.
All right. We'll talk to you later. That's it for this episode of the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast. Be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. For more info on trending cloud topics, be sure to visit ReadySetCloud.io and sign up for the Serverless Picks of the Week newsletter. I'm Alan Helton, and we're out of here.